to Punta Arenas. Wednesday, October 6th, 3:01 a.m. The jet flew through the night. The front of the cabin was darkened. Sarah and Sanjiang were sleeping on makeshift beds, but Evans couldn't sleep. He sat in the back, staring out the window at the carpet of clouds glowing silver in the moonlight. Kenner sat opposite him. "It's a beautiful world, isn't it?" he said. "Water vapor is one of the distinctive features of our planet. Makes such beauty. It's surprising. There is so little scientific understanding of how water vapor behaves." "Really? The atmosphere is a bigger mystery than anyone will admit. Simple example. No one can say for sure if global warming will result in more clouds or fewer clouds." "Wait a minute," Evans said. "Global warming is going to raise the temperature, so more moisture will evaporate from the ocean, and more moisture means more clouds." "That's one idea. But higher temperatures also means more water vapor in the air, and therefore fewer clouds." "So which is it?" "Nobody knows." "Then how do they make computer models of climate?" Evans said. Kenner smiled. "As far as cloud cover is concerned, they guess."
"They guess?"
"Well, they don't call it a guess. They call it an estimate, or parameterization, or an approximation. But if you don't understand something, you can't approximate it. You're really just guessing." Evans felt the beginnings of a headache. He said, "I think it's time for me to get some sleep." "Good idea," Kenner said, glancing at his watch. "We still have another 8 hours before we land." The flight attendant gave Evans some pajamas. He went into the bathroom to change. When he came out, Kenner was still sitting there, staring out the window at the moonlit clouds. Against his better judgment, Evans said, "By the way, you said earlier that the Vanuatu lawsuit won't go to trial."
"That's right."
"Why not? Because of the sea level data?"
"In part, yes.
It's hard to claim global warming is flooding your country if sea levels aren't rising." "It's hard to believe sea levels aren't rising," Evans said. "Everything you read says that they are. All the television reports," Kenner said.
"Remember African killer bees? There was talk of them for years. They're here now, and apparently there's no problem. Everything you read back then said disaster was imminent. Went on for months, but in the end, it just wasn't true." Evans thought that killer bees didn't prove anything about sea levels. He felt an urge to argue that point, but found himself suppressing a yawn.
"It's late," Kenner said. "We can talk about all this in the morning."
"You're not going to sleep?"
"Not yet. I have work to do." Evans went forward to where the others were sleeping. He lay down across the aisle from Sarah and pulled the covers up to his chin. Now his feet were exposed. He sat up, wrapped the blanket around his toes, and then lay down again. The blanket only came to mid-shoulder. He thought about getting up and asking the flight attendant for another. He heard the muted roar of the jet engines and wondered if the flight attendant would come up to check on him. That way he wouldn't have to get up and ask for another blanket. And then he slept. He awoke to harsh, glaring sunlight. He heard the clink of silverware and smelled coffee. Evans rubbed his eyes and sat up. In the back of the plane, the others were eating breakfast. He looked at his watch. He'd slept for more than 6 hours. He walked to the back of the plane.
"Better eat," Sarah said. "We land in an hour."
They stepped out onto the runway of Marso del Mar, shivering in the chill wind that whipped in off the ocean. The land around them was low, green, marshy, and cold. In the distance, Evan saw the jagged, snow-covered spires of the El Fogara range of southern Chile.
"I thought this was summer," he said.
"It is," Kenner said. "Late spring, anyway."
The airfield consisted of a small wooden terminal and a row of corrugated steel hangars, like oversized Quonset huts. There were 7 or 8 other aircraft on the field, all 4-engine prop planes. Some had skis that were retracted above the landing wheels.
"Right on time," Kenner said, pointing to the hills beyond the airport. A Land Rover was bouncing toward them. "Let's go."
Inside the little terminal, which was little more than a single large room, its walls covered with faded, stained air charts, the group tried on parkas, boots, and other gear brought by the Land Rover. The parkas were all bright red or orange.
"I tried to get everybody's size right," Kenner said. "Make sure you take long johns and microfleece, too."
Evans glanced at Sarah. She was sitting on the floor, pulling on heavy socks and boots. Then she unself-consciously stripped down to her bra and pulled a fleece top over her head. Her movements were quick, businesslike. She didn't look at any of the men. Sanjong was staring at the charts on the wall and seemed particularly interested in one. Evans went over.
"What is it?"
"It's the record from the weather station at Punta Arenas, near here. It's the closest city to Antarctica in the world."
He tapped the chart and laughed.
"There's your global warming."
Evans frowned at the chart.
"Finish up, everybody," Kenner said, glancing at his watch. "Our plane leaves in 10 minutes.
Evans said,
"Where exactly are we going?"
"To the base nearest Mount Terror. It's called Waddell Station, run by New Zealanders."
"What's there?"
"Not much, mate,"
the Land Rover driver said, and he laughed.
"But the way the weather's been lately, you'll be lucky if you can get there at all."
To Waddell Station, Wednesday, October 6th, 8:04 a.m. Evans stared out the narrow window of the Hercules. The vibration of the props made him sleepy, but he was fascinated by what he saw beneath him. Mile after mile of gray ice, a vista broken by intermittent fog, and the occasional outcrop of black rock. It was a monochromatic, sunless world, and it was huge.
"Enormous," Kenner said. "People have no perspective on Antarctica, because it appears as a fringe at the bottom of most maps. But in fact, Antarctica is a major feature on the Earth's surface, and a major factor in our climate. It's a big continent, 1.5 times the size of either Europe or the United States, and it holds 90% of all the ice on the planet."
90%? Sarah said. "You mean there's only 10% in the rest of the world?"
"Actually, since Greenland has 4%, all the other glaciers in the world, Kilimanjaro, the Alps, the Himalaya, Sweden, Norway, Canada, Siberia, they all account for 6% of the planet's ice. The overwhelming majority of the frozen water of our planet is in the continent of Antarctica. In many places, the ice is 5 or 6 miles thick."
"No wonder they're concerned that the ice here is melting," Evans said.
Kenner said nothing. Sanjong was shaking his head. Evans said, "Come on, guys. Antarctica is melting."
"Actually, it's not," Sanjong said. "I can give you the references if you'd like."
Kenner said,
"While you were asleep, Sanjong and I were talking about how to clarify things for you, since you seem to be so ill-informed."
"Ill-informed?" Evans said, stiffening.
"I don't know what else one would call it," Kenner said. Your heart may be in the right place, Peter, but you simply don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, he said, controlling his anger, Antarctica is melting.
You think repetition makes something true? The data show that one relatively small area called the Antarctic Peninsula is melting and calving huge icebergs. That's what gets reported year after year. But the continent as a whole is getting colder, and the ice is getting thicker.
Antarctica is getting colder?
Sanjung had taken out a laptop and was hooking it up to a small portable bubble jet printer.
He flipped open his laptop screen. What we decided, Kenner said, is that we're going to give you references from now on, because it's too boring to try and explain everything to you.
A sheet of paper began to buzz out of the printer.
Sanjung passed it to Evans.
Okay, well, I see slight cooling referred to here, Evans said. I also see warming of the peninsula of several degrees. That certainly seems more significant, and that peninsula is a pretty big part of the continent, isn't it?
He tossed the paper aside.
Frankly, I'm not impressed.
Sanjung said, The peninsula is 2% of the continent, and frankly, I am surprised that you did not comment on the most significant fact in the data you were given.
Which is?
When you said earlier that the Antarctic is melting, Sanjung said. Were you aware that it has been melting for the last 6,000 years?
Not specifically, no.
But generally, you knew that?
No, Evans said. I wasn't aware of that.
You thought that the Antarctic melting was something new?
I thought it was melting faster than previously, Evans said.
Maybe we won't bother anymore, Kenner said.
Sanjung nodded and started to put the computer away.
No, Evans said. I'm interested in what you have to say. I'm not closed-minded about this. I'm ready to hear new information.
You just did, Kenner said. Evans picked up the sheet of paper again and folded it carefully. He slipped it into his pocket.
These studies are probably financed by the coal industry, he said.
Probably, Kenner said. I'm sure that explains it. But then everybody's paid by somebody. Who pays your salary?
My law firm.
And who pays them?
The clients. We have several hundred clients.
You do work for all of them?
Me personally, no.
In fact, you do most of your work for environmental clients, Kenner said. Isn't that true?
Mostly, yes.
Would it be fair to say that the environmental clients pay your salary? Kenner said.
You could make that argument.
I'm just asking, Peter. Would it be fair to say environmentalists pay your salary?
Yes.
Okay. Then would it be fair to say the opinions you hold are because you work for environmentalists?
Of course not.
You mean you're not a paid flunky for the environmental movement?
No, the fact is,
you're not an environmental stooge, a mouthpiece for a great fundraising and media machine, a multi-billion-dollar industry in its own right with its own private agenda that's not necessarily in the public interest?
God damn it,
is this pissing you off? Kenner said.
You're damn right it is.
Good, Kenner said. Now you know how legitimate scientists feel when their integrity is impugned by slimy characterizations such as the one you just made.
Sanjung and I gave you a careful, peer-reviewed interpretation of data,
made by several groups of scientists from several different countries, and your response was first to ignore it, and then to make an ad hominem attack. You didn't answer the data, you didn't provide counter-evidence, you just smeared with innuendo.
Oh, fuck you, Evans said. You think you have an answer for everything, but there's only one problem. Nobody agrees with you. Nobody in the world thinks that Antarctica is getting colder.
These scientists do, Kenner said. They published the data.
Evans threw up his hands.
"The hell with it," he said. "I don't want to talk about this anymore."
He walked to the front of the plane and sat down, crossed his arms, and stared out the window.
Kenner looked at Sanjung and Sarah.
"Anyone feel like coffee?" Sarah had watched Kenner and Evans with a certain amount of uneasiness. Even though she had worked for the past 2 years for Morton, she had never shared her employer's passion for environmental issues. All during that time, Sarah had been in a tempestuous, exciting relationship with a handsome young actor. Their time together consisted of an unending series of passionate evenings, angry confrontations, slammed doors, tearful reconciliations, jealousies, and infidelities, and it had consumed her more than she cared to admit. The truth was that she paid no more attention to NERF or Morton's other environmental interests than the job required, at least until the son-of-a-bitch actor appeared in the pages of People magazine with the young actress from his TV show, and Sarah finally decided she had had enough, erased the guy from her cell phone, and threw herself into her work. But she certainly held the same general view about the state of the world as Evans did. Perhaps Evans was more aggressive in stating his views, and more trusting of his assumptions, but she basically agreed with him. And here was Kenner, casting doubt after doubt. It left her wondering whether Kenner was really correct about everything he was saying, and it also made her wonder just how he and Morton had become friends. She asked Kenner, "Did you have these same discussions with George?"
"In the last weeks of his life, yes."
"And did he argue with you the way Evans is?"
"No," Kenner shook his head.
Because by then he knew.
Knew what?
They were interrupted by the pilot's voice on the intercom.
"Good news," he said. "The weather's broken over Weddell, and we will land in 10 minutes. For those of you who have never made a landing on ice, seatbelts should be low and tight, and all your gear safely stowed. And we really mean it."
The plane began a slow, curving descent. Sarah looked out the window at a crusty expanse of white, snow-covered ice. In the distance, she saw a series of brightly colored buildings, red, blue, green, built on a cliff, overlooking the gray and choppy ocean.
"That's Weddell Station," Kenner said.